early in the show, we were talking about Keith witnessing somebody hitting somebody's car, and the bulldog that is Keith Britton made sure that that dude left his information and basically let the guy know if he didn't, he was going to leave the information with the front desk that so that the person whose car was hit, who wasn't there, would make sure to know who to call. But we threw the Twitter poll out there. 190 votes in right now, 54% saying they would call or they would alert someone or confront somebody if you witness somebody hit a car in a parking garage and it sure looked like they weren't going to do the honest thing. We did have somebody on, I think it was that guy in Cleveland, said last year, week 5, the 49ers-Browns game, he got out of his car to drive to his father's place for the game and he noticed a large dent on his bumper. No note was left. I was livid. If I was there to see things happening to someone else, I'm going to take photos. I think everybody's had their car dinged up in one way or another when you weren't around it.
I think I've decided that like what I would probably do is what that person did for me. I don't know that I would like confront the person like right there, but I would probably go back and like leave a note saying like this car next to you, here's the license plate, whatever. Like I'd get the information and leave them a note, but I don't know that I would confront the person. But I also think Keith kind of confirmed this too. I think it kind of depends on like time of day, mood that you're in. Like he even said, like if it was the end of the day and I was just trying to get home, I probably wouldn't have wasted all that time. But he's like, but it was the first thing I saw when I got to work, so I had the time to do it. So why not?
Also, with respect to Kevin Stefanski, I'm a vibe guy. So you mention what mood am I in? It's not just that. It's what mood does everybody in the parking garage put me in? You know, like, I'll be honest, man, there's some times where...
Like the day when Double A tried to go up the ramp and...
And you know what? There's something about the morning show producer, because Mitch almost hit me the same freaking way.
He did the same thing?
Yeah.
He didn't go around the pole?
I don't know if Ken is, like, encouraging them. I don't know if it's, like, the morning boys are targeting. It's like bumper cars.
See if you
cars.
Can rile up Nick so we have more content for the morning
but
show
then,
is what it is.
Here's the thing. Double A saw me and he knew he was cooked. Mitch was just oblivious. And I actually called Mitch. I was like, did you not see the giant red truck and the large irate man? And he's like, oh, that was you? And I was like, what the hell? Yes, of course it was me.
So
there's not two people that look this ugly in the area, okay?
Clearly, Mitch has been avoiding going around that pole for so long that he thinks that now, like, the way you drive in that garage is just not go around the pole.
But it is what Keith did that I think was so smart about it is he watched the guy for a minute to see, how is he trying to pull in? Like a jackass. He was trying to back in at a 270-degree angle. That's just dumb. Then he looked to see, did the guy look in it and show you in any way that he knew that he hit the car? So he got to do a little scouting. Because I'll be honest with you, and this is folks from who do not come downtown often, I love you. I'm trying to build a bridge here. But when I see somebody who clearly doesn't park in Cleveland parking garages often, and I get caught behind you, you're the person I'm going to tell on 100% of the time. Because it's that we're going to take, and I don't fly in the parking garage because I could kill somebody with that truck.
Yeah.
But I don't drive up a ramp at 3 miles an hour. And so when I have to do that up three flights to get to my parking spot, you step out of line in one way. I'm telling you, buddy. You are hearing it from me in one way or another, or I'm going to narc on you. I think I forgot to tell this. There's a guy that pulled over the line and actually literally was bumper to bumper with me. And for like 5 seconds, it was a bad day. It was not a good day. I think Dustin and I had like gotten to a legit like disagreement off
down,
air.
Drag him out.
I didn't like the show. I was in a grumpy mood and I came out and they were bumper to bumper with me. And it was like a big car parking in a compact car spot. And they were bumper to bumper on my truck. Vanessa's car, do whatever you want. But on my truck, my baby. And I thought for a second, I'm going to put my tow hitch in the front grill and just pull that son of a gun off. I didn't. Instead, I left a very condescending note. Think of like the three meanest things you can say to somebody. And I said that to that person in a note.
All in a note.
Yeah. So
that was one of those like, well, you didn't do the whole like write a very mean email and then like ask somebody, hey, should I leave this note? You just went for it. You didn't care.
No.
Guns ablazing.
Well, I thought that was the nicer thing. I thought ripping the grill. I thought backing my tow hitch into their grill and ripping it off by pulling forward real quick. I thought
that
was the extreme measure.
That would have been better, though, because that would have like messed up their day. The note thing, like, they can just read it, toss it, and not give a damn the rest of the life.
So here was my thinking.
Ripping off their bumper, they didn't see your license plate, and...
Well, but okay, we do have video there.
Oh, that's true.
But here's the thing. I thought to myself...
How long does it stick around, though?
Well, can are they going to notice? Like, because think about it. If they parked right in front of the elevator, the front of their car is parked where they're not going to go see. How many times do you look at the front of your car? You see the dynamics of what went... All the different levels that went through my brain on this one. H.E. Pennypacker saying on Twitter, and this is 100% true, there needs to be a documentary about the Halley Garage. To me, it's a reality show or a scripted comedy starring Shane Gillis. It's one of those
Shane
two things.
Gillis. As Nick Wilson.
Yeah, I would be like...
driving his truck up with somebody who didn't decide to go around the pool.
I'd be like 1997 Sting, just walking around with a baseball bat. I'd be like the Equalizer, man.
See, I don't park in the Halley Garage often, but when I do, I sounded like the most interesting man in the world commercials there. I have a very compact car because I also drive a Toyota Corolla, and there's a section on level two that's like compact cars only, and it's the only section that's not like the spots that are like set aside for like valet or people who like use it more regularly. And so whenever people ask me, they're like, "Oh, where'd you park?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm in Halley." And he's like, "Oh, what floor?" And they'll like try to hit the elevator button. I'm like, "Oh, I'm on floor two." And they're like, "How did you get on floor two?" That's like the most, but it's literally like if you go where that pole is that you're supposed to go around, there's a section where you can just go straight through and there's no cars ever parked over there. And I just get the little compact car spot and I'm good. So I never have these problems in the Halley Garage because I park, there's like nobody ever in that section. Ever.
So Dustin has kept his parking spot. So he's not here. I don't know if you guys know this any day. So unless he needs it, he'll tell me ahead of time, I just park there. And so I'm paying the average rate for an exclusive spot. Life is good.
It's
let me just
bad.
Tell you that.
You know what? That's a good money grab for Dustin. He could really charge somebody.
Yeah, but he's not. And don't give him that damn idea, Spencer. So we started the show.
As a known grifter, I'll make money any way possible around here.
Yeah,
there.
Okay. But here's
why
the thing.
It came to mind for me.
But here's the thing.
I can't afford that parking spot to begin with.
You've got to grift somebody else. You grift me.
I didn't say he should charge you that rate. I'm just saying. Maybe one day when you're not working, he should just find, you know, should auction it off.
Saturdays and Sundays?
Yeah. Those are busy days for people to park downtown. What do you mean? Those are like the busiest days for people to park downtown.
I just like the idea that Dustin needs more money. That's the funniest part of this.
I was thinking about it from my perspective. Yeah. If it was me, I would need the money.
So with all this, we started the show talking about Deshaun. And I espoused the theory that I think there's a segment of Clevelanders who want Deshaun to fail. Not because of the lawsuit or the allegations, although I'm sure that might be part of it. Not because of the bad football, but because it's the easiest. It's easy to swap in and out a quarterback.
Well, I think at the root of it, though, is all the off-the-field stuff.
Well,
like, I think it starts there, and then it turns into, like, well, the easier thing is just to accept that he's bad and
well,
move on.
Well, but I don't think it's one. I don't think it's like one thing or another. I think it's a whole thing. Because I also think Deshaun has not endeared himself enough. But when it comes to fixing the Browns, it's easier to swap out a quarterback you don't like for whatever reason, a quarterback that you don't identify with for whatever reason, rather than firing the head coach who's been to the playoffs two times in 4 years, rather than firing the GM who, yeah, hasn't done everything well, but you got the Amari thing, you got the Za'Darius trade, he did draft MJ Emerson, and let's be honest, it's easier to swap out the quarterback than firing the owner. That doesn't happen unless you're Washington. So I think some of this, after this game, hearing bench Deshaun, cut Deshaun, I think it's just that's the easiest way to relieve pressure for us. And to me, the Browns and Deshaun have failed each other on a few different fronts. I put it at 50-50. What ratio would you put it at?
I think it's 50-50. The organization failed Deshaun. I don't know. After this year, I have a hard time. Like, depending on how the rest of this year goes, and I'm still giving him a little bit of leeway here. I kind of said I think like 4 weeks was my cutoff of deciding whether or not I can decide, like, okay, Deshaun still has something there or he doesn't. So I haven't panicked completely after these first three games because I'm like, there's been some good things. There's been some good signs. I'll give him a little bit more time. And, and he didn't play in the preseason, all these different things. After this year, though, I'd say right now maybe it's at like, okay, maybe it's just over 50-50, But I think by the end of – actually, I take that back. I would say right now I think it's Deshaun has failed the Browns more so than it's the organization's failed him. But I think maybe it's like 60-40 Deshaun. Mm-mm. I think after this year, you bring in a new offensive coordinator. You build an offense that's for him. I think it ends up then just being more that it's Deshaun filling the Browns, and he's not it.
But when that's
not until the end of the season.
But when do we see that offense, though? Because we haven't seen it through three games. They've run jumbo sets, calling Carter Stefanski's offense. They haven't run motion. They haven't done a lot of play action. Like, those are
It's funny you ask that, because this is actually what I think is the more interesting conversation in this. I think it's actually
Topic one-upping me?
Kind of. Because
what a D move.
Well, no. I think it's actually less about them, like, them failing Deshaun, and more about, like, them failing Kevin Stefanski in some ways, if I'm being 100% honest.
No, don't do that.
No.
Don't do that. Come on.
Nick,
Kevin Stefanski is the head coach of a football team. You can have a high standard for him.
I understand, but
you can ask difficult questions about
from
him.
From the start, well, the most difficult question you can ask is, why would the organization get a guy that wasn't going to be able to run the system that Kevin Stefanski runs, that they apparently love so much that they made him the head coach for?
Okay,
and
but
I understand,
with that,
like,
quick,
trying to.
Real quick. Same question. Why did Kevin Stefanski then stick to an offense that Deshaun didn't do? Because that's a two-sided thing. Again, like, did the Browns trade for the guy? Yes. I'm going to go ahead and say Kevin had a say in it. But, like, at the same point, why didn't Kevin change the offense till now?
Well, I question more and more that he had a say in it when, like, we continue to see what we're seeing. Like, I think he's continued to just – and you're right. Like, we haven't seen this new offense in its entirety. I just saw the number on the Browns are 31st. And pre-snap motion. And all we heard about all offseason and all we saw during training camp was all these guys moving around. They had two tight ends in, motion into the other side of the formation. They had Jerry Jeudy starting on the right, going to the left. They had Amari Cooper going from one side to the other. So where's that been? So, yeah, like, on some level, there is failing on both sides going on. I just can – every time there's struggles, though, I go back to the fact that, like, this marriage from the start – was probably a bad idea, and now we're just seeing it bear itself out where they've tried all these different iterations, and maybe it comes down to, like, a tiger can't change his stripes. Maybe Kevin Stefanski just deep down can't change who he is and the offense he wants to run, and there's not really a good way to blend his offense with what Ken Dorsey wants to do. And so, yeah, if you want to call that failing Deshaun, I guess that's failing Deshaun, but I just ask, like, why even do this from the start?
But I don't think it's just failing Deshaun. I think it's failing yourself. I think whether it's ego or stubbornness
I can't say that about Kevin. I can't say that he's failed himself.
Why?
Because I've seen him over the last 4 years have success.
Yes, with quarterbacks that fit what he wanted to do.
Right, and
so
those have been the best moments of this team.
The
guy that's now won two coach of the year awards, who got this job on the back of the fact that this was the offense he ran and it was a successful offense.
Mm-hmm. With a quarterback who doesn't play like Deshaun. Add that context.
He's supposed to throw out the fact that, like,
yes,
he's had success doing this?
Yes, if you're a good head coach, or actually no, because he's the offensive head coach play caller. I don't even know what to call it. It's like a long distance, low casual commitmentship, whatever the thing is from Barbie. I've watched it 100 times, guys. I'm sorry that's a reference. But my point is, his job, what, just you wait.
I hope I have a girl too, because if I have a girl, then we're done. That's the dream right there.
Quintuplets,
Jack. I don't want to have to go for three.
Barbie out the ass for the next 18 years. That's a pox upon your house, sir.
I wasn't trying to take a shot at the Barbie references. I've seen the movie. I just haven't seen it enough to know the references.
Real quick. It is Kevin Stefanski's job to get the most out of his players and put the players in the best position, right?
I mean, because here's the thing.
No.
Yes, because I do subscribe to the idea that coaches are supposed to sort of blend things and make it work. But
are you beholden to talent or a scheme?
I also subscribe to the idea that this wasn't a Kevin Stefanski thing. Like, bringing in Deshaun Watson wasn't fully his thing, and he probably was like, yeah, I'll make it work. I'll do the best I can, because he was along for the ride. But I don't necessarily subscribe to the idea that it was him out there trumpeting for getting Deshaun Watson.
But again, have to make the best of it.
Okay, I think
it's an excuse.
I think he's trying to make the best of it, but I think he also knows, like, his offense is successful.
Yes, there are a million of successful offenses. There's more than just, there's a variety is the spice of life. There's more than just the Kubiak offense. I love it too. All right, I loved it when Shanahan run it. I love it when Shanahan runs
it. Shanahan has found the quarterback to run his system. That's the whole reason like Brock Purdy works, because he's thriving in that system.
Yes.
If Kevin Stefanski was if Deshaun Watson was forced upon him, or that's what the owners
Spencer,
wanted to do.
You don't trade for $230 million quarterbacks if you don't buy into
you
the quarterback
do if you're Jimmy
on any
Haslam
level.
And you're desperate and you really, really want to finally get a guy that you think is going to be the best quarterback you've ever had.
And I bring in this with love and respect. This is the problem. It's never anybody's fault. It can't be the Browns' fault because it's all Deshaun's fault. Well, but it can't be Deshaun's fault because it's all Stefanski's fault. It can't be Stefanski's fault because it's all Andrew Berry's fault. No, it can't be Andrew Berry's fault because it's Jimmy Haslam's fault. It's all of their fault. If you want to be the Browns or Pittsburgh, everybody has to atone. If you want to make it work with this dude, everybody has to drop their ego, drop their gravitas, and figure it out. Like, it's that simple. Like, this idea. No, Kevin doesn't get a pass. He could have walked away. He signed an extension.
He walked away? Why would he walk away?
If he's really that hard up because Deshaun's been forced on him.
I think he has tried to make it work with Deshaun. I just don't think it's working.
Which way? Was it forcing him to offense that didn't fit him? Is that trying to make it work?
I think early on, the last year they apparently tried something different. I don't think it looked all that different.
But now this year
they have Ken Dorsey in here. Like, I think that there's been steps where he's tried to at least blend the offenses. I just think he gets into game day and then you're in the heat of the moment and it just ends up looking a lot more like his standard offense and they're not seeing these new elements of it. So maybe that is his fault. I'm not saying that he's blameless. But I'm just saying, like, from the question that I continue to ask isn't so much like, is Deshaun failing the Browns or the Browns failing Deshaun? It's why the hell did you get a quarterback that couldn't even run the system that you hired the coach that you brought here to run? That's the thing that's always been perplexing
to me.
Why'd
you do it? No, that's giving Kevin a pass. 216. I won't indulge the question because by the very nature of the question, it's giving somebody who is a willing participant in this a pass. So this is an extension of the conversation. I do want to know from you guys. Anik Wilson says, who is failing who? Like, what's the ratio? I think I put it 50-50 that Deshaun and the Browns are equally failing each other on multiple fronts there. You had said it's closer to 60-40. I did want to extend this thing into the question of, because there's the one thing that I think is driving Browns fans crazy, and I can understand and empathize with everybody on this, is that there's not any clarity. It doesn't feel like we're any closer to clarity with Deshaun, even in the negative. Because there's ways to defend because of the offensive line.
Yeah.
Are you still confident that if Deshaun plays for the rest of the season, doesn't miss a game, that we'll get a clear and definitive picture and answer?
No, I don't know how you could be. What have we said? All it's been at this point is like inconsistent good play and then inconsistent bad play, to your point where now we just have this war on both sides of people just going at...
We're talking politics again?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I did say earlier, like, this whole conversation about Deshaun almost is, like, it almost is like a direct...
Say the word microcosm. Radio guys love the word microcosm.
I do say microcosm a lot.
Yeah.
But it almost is like it's like a mirror to what's going on in politics, honestly. It's like one side's so riled up in one camp and one side's so riled up in the other camp. And then there's the people in the middle who are like, well, I just, you know, I'm trying to figure out where I am. But that middle ground doesn't exist. Because the second you say like, yeah, Deshaun looked bad the other day, they're like, oh, you Deshaun hater. And then the second you say like, I thought he played a pretty good game. They're like, oh, how dare you defend? I heard the guy when I was driving in who said, you must be on the Browns payroll because can you imagine if we were?
I can only guess what some of those cats make, but man, come on.
That'd be nice.
Pay me already.
I could definitely afford that parking spot in the house.
I like the idea that the guy who's trying to be as objective as possible is the guy on the payroll. Not any of the cadre of people telling you exactly what you want to hear because it makes you sleep better at night. It's the guy that's like, yeah, I kind of think the crowd might be a little off on this one on both sides. It's Switzerland that's the problem, not the sides dropping nukes on each other. I actually am confident because I think the problem that we have, the kernel of doubt that keeps me coming back to, I'm going to watch Deshaun this week with clear eyes and full heart. Don't quit.
Can't lose.
I butchered a little bit there. The thing that brings me back is sample size. He still has not played, despite being here for going on 3 years, he still hasn't played 17 full games. And he hasn't played a full season. So,
but you were asking if at the end of the season.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean is.
So if he plays the whole season, you think we'll have an answer?
Yeah. Well, one way or another. Like,
well, so
like,
I think we'll have an answer because I think if he plays still inconsistently and we still don't have an answer.
You just said if, though. You're leaning away already
okay,
there.
Okay.
Give me impartial, Spencer.
I am assuming that he's going to continue to play inconsistently the rest of the season.
Okay.
And so when we get to the end of the season, I think we'll have our answer if that's the case.
I think everyone's assuming that.
Because at the end of year three, if he is still doing that, I think you have your answer. I think you know that he's not the guy. And well, and that's part of the reason, too, why I'm 60-40 more so Deshaun. Mm-hmm. Because here's the other thing. You can say all you want that, like, system, he needs it for him. You got to set him
every
up for success.
Every quarterback needs a system, by
things.
The way, Spencer.
And that is fair. That is fair. But at in the same vein, you paid all this money for this guy, and you traded the draft picks that you traded for this guy.
How is that Deshaun's fault?
On some level, though, you're expecting him to be so transcendent when you do that, that he can still thrive in that system. Maybe not to the peak level that you're looking for, but that he still can have success in that system. I think there is some truth to that. I'm not saying this is the best system for him and it's perfect fit and all these different things. But if you give that type of contract and you trade the three first round picks, you're expecting him to be this transcendent player that can fit into almost anything.
So if that is true, and we should all have our magnifying glasses out to examine every part of Deshaun, which we should, 100%. Why aren't we doing the same thing with the team? That's speaking of system, play calling, head coach, GM, ownership. That's all I'm saying. I'm not here to polish what I've seen through what 14 games now with Deshaun. That's not what I'm here to do.
I get it.
But I am here to be to give the Browns a chance this year and understand it's week three. I do think there's an ability to etch-a-sketch your brain and go, all right, I know what I've seen, but let's consider the context as part of this. Because if the context wasn't considered when you ran Baker out of the town, right? And the media, and I will say this, a lot of people in this town bitching about Deshaun now were the same people that thought Baker was unacceptable and made sure that they helped grease the skids and made it easier to get Baker out of here. So if you do the same thing to the same guy.
Well, I think that plays into why people don't want to blame Deshaun, because there are some people that were, oh, Baker stinks, get him out of here. And so now they've hitched their wagon to Deshaun. And they're like, well, I'll be proven right eventually. And
no,
so they're just staunchly in that camp.
So
I think there's at least a contingency of fans.
I think there's some of that. But I think, again, they ran Baker out of town. He was the fall guy. Okay, you get one. He happened to be the best quarterback we'd have since Bernie. Maybe Vinny. But okay, you got your one. Now you're going to do it again with another guy. No matter the validity of the reasons, you've got to ask yourself, why aren't we making it with quarterbacks, especially when the other quarterbacks playing pretty darn good football down in Tampa?